Today, if you want to hit somebody below the belt, you call them a slacker. Wikipedia defines a slacker as a person who habitually avoids work or lacks a work ethic. I'm told that the word may have originated as early as the late 19th century, but it became well known in the United States during World War I, when the word slacker was commonly used to describe someone who didn't participate in the war effort, especially military service. Slowly, the term evolved to refer to someone who avoids responsibility and just don't exert themselves. Don't do what's needed to do. They're a slacker. The word gained popularity from the 1985 film Back to the Future when the character Mr. Strickland said, "You got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker. You remind me of your father when he was here. He was a slacker too." Since then, the term slacker has become just a part of our culture. Well, the Bible does not use the term slacker. It uses a word that is even more deadly when it rolls off the tongue. Not slacker, but sluggard. Sluggard. It's the same concept, though. And so at this moment, you may be thinking to yourself, well, I'm sure glad that Tom isn't going to talk about me today, because I'm not a slacker or a sluggard. Well, I think in much the same way about myself. But even though I don't consider myself a slacker, there are areas in my life where I don't take responsibility. And I don't do what I need to do, even for my own well-being. Which means that a sluggard lives in certain areas of my life. I've got a slugger within. And I'll bet, be honest with yourself, you might have a sluggard living in an area of your life or two as well. One thing that camouflages my sluggardliness is my obsessive compulsive neurosis. Yeah, I'm AAA. You know the problem with obsessive compulsive personality? Sometimes we become so obsessed with thinking things through because we want to come to a perfect solution, perfect conclusion, perfect set of circumstances that we just think and never act before it's too late. Call it any psychological label you want. That involves being a slacker in biblical terms. So if you're a slacker, listen up this morning. If you're not, but may have an area in your life that's slacker-esque, listen up as well. Because today we're going to be talking about the sluggard within. And I'd like us to begin by going to the very core, the very heart of a sluggard, of a slacker, by finding our way to Proverbs 26, verse 14. Proverbs 26 and verse 14. This is at the core of a slackard. Proverbs 26:14 says, "As a door turns on its hinges, so does the lazy man," literally the sluggard, "on his bed." Now it seems to me that a door and its hinges is an excellent analogy for a sluggard or a slacker. It moves, it turns, but it doesn't go anywhere. That's because a sluggard views life from the vantage point of ease and leisure. He's resting. He's recouping his energies. Rest to the normal person is an interlude. It's a side dish. But to the sluggard, it's the main course or objective of his life. He will extend himself as little as possible and often won't even budge an inch when it's necessary. You won't even go there. That's at the core of a sluggard, a commitment to ease, to rest. So how does a sluggard see himself when he looks in the mirror? Well, Proverbs 26 verse 16 puts it this way. The lazy man, that is the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. The concept of answering sensibly literally carries with it the idea of providing a palatable or a tasty answer. That is, saying what is appropriate or acceptable and good on any occasion. But the sluggard deems himself wiser than seven men who can give a tasty or an appropriate response to any situation. That's because a sluggard's perception of himself is incredibly flawed. He looks in the mirror and he sees Superman. When he compares himself to seven men, he's using the number of completeness. That's the number seven in Scripture. Therefore, you would think seven men, seven capable men, together forming a unit or a team, would be able to cover all the sides of an issue, whatever that issue might be, and then speak appropriately to that issue. And yet, the sluggard thinks he's one up on a team of seven competent individuals functioning as a single unit. That's how warped his sense of himself is. Now I want to speak to our culture, because I've seen something in my own life that tends to camouflage the sluggard within. Busyness and the swirl of activity and having our schedules full. When that takes place in a person's life, that person often concludes that they couldn't possibly be a sluggard. They're in such high demand. They've got so much going on. They couldn't possibly fit something else in, so they must not be a sluggard. Certainly no sluggard would live in such a life. And yet I would like to say that busyness often brings about self-deception. It often camouflages areas of our life where a sluggard really, really lives. Because we often substitute activity and busyness for having a plan and the execution, the steps necessary to execute that plan to bring about a satisfactory conclusion. But sometimes we're just busy and there's no plan. And we're really not going anywhere. We're just getting real tired real fast. And we're in high demand. And we think that's a good substitute. And I think that gives us an inflated sense of ourselves that there's really not a sluggard deep within. So let's back off for a minute and ask, does a sluggard have anything to offer? Is there anything that he could actually bring to the table? And I would say yes. He specializes in two things: having a voracious appetite and having lots of desire. Let's look, for example, at Proverbs 13:4. Proverbs 13:4. Which says the soul, or the word nephesh here, the soul, that's the seat of our appetites, our desires. That's where it all takes place. The soul, the seat of our appetites and desires of a sluggard, of a lazy man, a sluggard, desires, he craves, even covets. Deep inside his soul, boy, does he want. He wants experiences. He wants opportunities. He wants wealth. He wants that person to put in his arm. He wants to, there's all kinds of desires. Ravenous appetite produces all those kinds of desires and cravings. And yet, you see it? He has nothing. But the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. The sluggard has an insatiable appetite to go places, to accomplish things, to see things, to do things, to own things, to be with certain people. But his appetites are a substitute for any to do anything to bring those things about. He may even have an incredible ability to express what he wants. And you sit down and you talk to this person and say, wow, is this person going somewhere? Can you believe all they want to do? And you look back and they've been saying those things for years and never been to one of those places. They've never accomplished one of those things. They never achieved anything they've talked continually about. They've got a huge appetite, but that's all they got. They have no actions to satisfy it. As my dear mother would frequently remind me, Tommy, Tommy, are you listening to me? Tommy, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, whether or not the road to hell is paved with good intentions, I do know this. The sluggard, or the sluggard within me and in within you, is simply content with wanting, with desiring, with intending to do, coveting all kinds of stuff without accepting any responsibility to step up and do anything to satisfy those appetites. But boy, do they specialize in wanting. They got a ravenous appetite for everything out there. Just no follow through. Let's look at another passage that deals with their specialties. Proverbs 21, 25 and 26. Proverbs 21, 25 and 26 says this, the desire of the lazy man, the sluggard, kills him. Wait a minute. You mean just having a desire kills somebody? Listen up. For his hands refuse to labor. That's why his desires kill him. Because it's desires only with no work to bring the desires about, so he ends up killing himself. He covets greedily all day long, wakes up desiring, wakes up talking about it. Through the middle of the morning, he's talking about more. He's going to go, he's got it all laid out. He covets greedily all day long, but the righteous, now I want you to listen to this last phrase. It's a key. The righteous gives, does not spare. The righteous is in contrast to the sluggard, the slacker. The righteous gives and does not spare. So here's the point. Not only can't the sluggard be generous to anyone else, he's not even generous to himself. Because he can't provide for himself and what he really needs. As a result, he'll die with an unsatisfied appetite and empty hands. He talks a good game. It's all about what he wants, what he intends to do, without ever doing anything to bring it about. He just doesn't follow through on anything. But don't think that a slackard has no skills. Oh, sluggard. He got one skill that nobody else can even compare with. You see that there? Look with me in Proverbs 20, verse 4. Excuses. That's his well-honed skill. Boy, he'll dazzle you. He'll amaze you and entertain you with his excuses. Proverbs 20, verse 4 says, the lazy man, the sluggard, will not plow because of winter. Now, this is the time in the Middle East where the Proverbs were written, when it's cold and rainy outside, but it's ideal for plowing and readying the fields for the growing season. It's hard work. It's sort of nasty work, but it's very profitable. You got to do it. But the sluggard will not plow during the winter. You know why? Cold out there. I don't like to be cold. It's damp. I could get a cold. It could turn into pneumonia. I could die of consumption. So I won't do that. So he stays inside. Notice the second part of verse 4. As a result of that, he will beg during harvest when crops are growing all around him, not in his fields. Of course, he probably doesn't even own fields. He went bankrupt a long time ago. But in the fields around him, he will beg during harvest and have nothing. Two, I'll call them solid Hebrew commentators, suggest that he begs not from people, but from the fields He refused to plow and plant in and thus harvest from to satisfy his physical hunger. Too late in the game to do it. It's already harvest season. Here they come, the harvester combines coming in. You got nothing. So he goes out to the fields and takes the dirt and sends and begs, give me something to eat. I'm hungry. Too late. Too late. In other words, the slugger avoids any discomfort by constructing some incredible excuses. It's too cold. It's too damp. It's too wet out there. Takes too much. And then suffers the consequences caused by those excuses. Now, here's another whale of excuse. I love this one more than all the rest. Proverbs 22:13. The lazy man, the sluggard, says, as he hyperventilates, there's a lion outside. I should be slain in the streets. Now think about that excuse. How would the sluggard even know there's a lion in the streets of the village where he lives? First of all, lions don't normally frequent city streets. Now, I've known there to be a coyote or two in Colonial Park, but that's about it. We don't have lions there. Neither do they have lions in city streets. But even if one lion was in a city street where the sluggard lived, how would he know it? He's inside, hinged to his bed, in his life of ease. The sluggard sees himself as the lion's next victim, and I think more specifically, more importantly, as the victim of life's demands. It's too much for him, so he just shuts down, invents his own dream world of wanting and coveting and desiring, but doing nothing. And his excuse is his justification for doing absolutely nothing. This proverb also highlights the sluggard's extremely vivid imagination, which gives rise to the wildest and most far-fetched excuses known to mankind. Oh my goodness, write a book on him. He's a master of excuses. One question though. In the area or the areas of your life, my life, where a sluggard might live, what excuses are we substituting for action? What's our line? What's our story that we're sticking to? It's causing us to let that area in our life go south, drift. Well, here's one last example of his excuses, and this we go to the vineyard. Proverbs 24:30-34. A little extended. The proverbialist Solomon says, I went by the field of the sluggard, the lazy man, by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was. Here's what he watched. Here's what he drank in with his eyes. All overgrown with thorns, this vineyard of his. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. Nobody's minding the store. Nobody's doing anything. What the proverbialist saw was an absolute mess, a pathetic excuse for a vineyard. He goes on to say, when I saw it, wrote Solomon, when I saw it, I considered it well. I drank it in. I processed it. I looked on it and I received instruction. Now here's what he learned from his observation. I want you to notice how many times the word little is found in the rest of the verse. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of your hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler and your need like an armed man. A little, 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 and then the bottom drops out. How'd that happen? The lesson of the overgrown vineyard is that the emptiness of a sluggard's life takes place in tiny little increments. with one excuse after another. And the bitter end may come suddenly, but it's really the culmination of a long, slow process of just give me another minute. Let me, tomorrow. How about a little later? Not right now. How about, let's get to that some other time. And then all of a sudden, the bottom drops out. Every new excuse, every reason to delay or procrastinate is simply added to all the other times you've done the same, which slowly closed the door to doing anything meaningful with his life. And there he is, no vino, with his cheese and crackers. Regarding a sluggard's excuses, as Saturday Night Live, Rosanna was accustomed to saying, it's always something. If it ain't one thing, it's another. That's his excuses. They just come and boy, are they vivid. He loves it. So in making all those excuses, though, the sluggard actually sets a trap for himself. Proverbs 15:19 describes that. You see, the sluggard's mindset of ease entraps him in his own world of moral irresponsibility, and with it then the pain, the deprivation that reaps. Proverbs 15:19 says it this way, the way of the sluggard, the way of the lazy man is like a hedge of thorns. You can make a hedge with all kinds of shrubbery. Some are very nice to the hand. They almost feel good. Ooh, that's nice. That's soft. Not a hedge of thorns. That hurts. You bristle. Cuts. Draws blood. The way of the sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of the upright is a highway, an interstate, 75 miles an hour. The sluggard's mindset dictates a lifestyle which carries with it a built-in trap. And that's the problem with traps, especially thorny ones. They hurt when we're ensnared by them. His lifestyle of all talk, all desiring, all excuses, and no action traps him in reaping the consequences of it. Things don't just work out always. Things don't just magically occur. Always. His own trap leaves him with nothing to show for it except a world of hurt, an empty belly, an empty life. Another verse describes this trap a little more detailed. Proverbs 19:15 says laziness, that's our word sluggardliness, same root. Sluggardliness cast one into a deep sleep. The word cast means to hurl downward. You just sort of dropped off. It's almost like a free fall. When there's that sluggardliness within, it's sort of, we free fall with that into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Interesting. The word deep sleep is one Hebrew word. It's seldom used in the Hebrew scriptures, but it's used in one very interesting place. We're not going to turn there. It's Judges chapter 4, verse 21. During the dark days of the Judges, there was a king, an enemy of Israel, Sisera. And he was exhausted in the field of battle. And he came to a particular tent when there was a Jewish woman. And she gave him something to drink. And he fell into such a deep sleep that he became oblivious to anything in the world going around him, so that Jael was able to take a spike, a tent spike, as he laid on one temple and put it on the top temple and drive it through all through his brain and came out the other temple, nailed him to the ground. And he was totally unaware. That's how the word deep sleep is. That's the trap set by a sluggard for himself. It hurls him down into a place where he becomes oblivious to what's going on around him. What people are saying, what's happening, the need in his own life, he becomes totally unaware of it. He is that numbed by his excuses and his pretenses. He's rationalized, he's offered excuses, and he becomes oblivious to reality. He can't see what he's doing to himself. So he may refer to what state he's in as the status quo, but as Chuck Swindoll translates it, that's Latin for the mess we's in. And he's in a mess. He's in a world of hurt. So what awaits him is pain, deprivation. And it's like he can't even see it coming. And everybody else can, but he can't. That's the trap the sluggard sets for himself by choosing to live a life of ease and moral irresponsibility. But how low can a sluggard really sink? Well, Proverbs chapter 19, verse 24, pictures it in very graphic terms, pathetic terms. Proverbs 19, 24 says this, "A sluggard, a lazy man, buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again." Here he is, sitting around with some friends, and they're couch potatoes, okay? That's fine. Doesn't mean you're sluggard. Doesn't mean you're not a sluggard either. And so there you are, between you is a little table, and there's a bowl of a sauce or guacamole, or the ancient equivalent thereof. And you get a chip, and you reach it out. You know, you're laying on your back, you reach out, put the chip in the dip or whatever it is, and it falls in the dish, you can't move. You're spent. You're exhausted. You've extended yourself too far to finish even what would feel good in your tummy and on your tongue. Can't do it. To what makes this word picture even more pathetic is the original Hebrew word translated here, bowl. It's really the word for a flat saucer with no sides. It's all you have to do is go like this, one hand. You don't have to go. It's not a four-step process. It's a two-step process. And he won't even complete that. So sluggards may make a promising start, but they will falter before completing the most minimal of tasks, even one that is for their own good or for their own best interest. So he comes up empty in spite of all the opportunities presented to him. The bowl of guacamole, for example. So the solution for a sluggard is not food. It's not giving him money. It's a change of attitude. And to get the attention of the sluggard, he's got to feel pain. 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 Even when we may not be a sluggard, one may still reside in a part of us, or several parts of us. And if that's the case, we're probably not even handling that area in our own best interest. I know that women tend to have a little bit more sense when they feel something going on in their bodies. They'll tend to go to these people called doctors. You know, those people that do that stuff, you know, that take care of your body. Dentists, you know, they do all therapists, physical therapists, you know, those people. Yeah, but a lot of men feel like, well, yeah, but if I go, he may tell me something that I don't like to hear, and then it may be true that it's happening within me, but if I don't go and don't hear it, it's not happening. Sounds good to me. That's a sluggard living inside of us. How about with finances? You know, if we really took this budget thing seriously and got on one, rather than just go from paycheck to check, paycheck, or paying the minimum off on our credit card balance, we may really discover our true financial condition. But if I don't do that and I just keep things going on, I'll never really know, so I'm off the hook, right? Hello. How about a relationship put on cruise control? I think it's really going good. I don't want to ask because I don't really want to know, because then I may learn something that I don't want to hear. I'm ill-equipped for it, and so I'll just let it go. Hello. All areas where a sluggard may live inside of us. Sometimes we, to be able to take a step in the right direction, we need to get to somebody outside of us, not our mate. Maybe not somebody who's going to be a yes sir, yes sir. Get somebody on the outside to tell you, you're being a slugger, you're a slacker boy, slacker girl, to help us go in the right direction. I want to look at one last concern in dealing with a sluggard around us or the one living inside of us. And that's the grief that we can expect from a sluggard every time. Proverbs chapter 10 verse 26 says this, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard, the lazy man, to those who send him. Vinegar is acidic. When you put it in your mouth, your teeth go, ugh, yuck! Or how about smoke to the eyes? Makes you cry. Rub your eyes and they turn all red. You're irritated. So is the sluggard to those who send him, who count on him to get anything done. Send him as an envoy or accomplish a mission, even a simple task. You're going to end up regretting it. You'll end up being frustrated and disappointed. The process will be a major irritant to you. You'll expect sweet wine, a good word in return, and you get vinegar instead. You expect a warming fire, and you get smoke-filled eyes instead. The sluggard may not begin the task. He may delay in doing it with 1,000 wild and far-fetched excuses. He may abort it once he started it, or he may not do it the way it needs to be done. But regardless, one way or another, a sluggard will drop the ball and cause us deep grief and a ton of regret when we count on them to do anything that involves moral responsibility. The harsh reality of dealing with sluggards in our world makes it even more important than we deal with the sluggard living inside of us. Perhaps it's in an area of our life where we count on ourselves to come through. And one day something just going to click into gear and it'll start happening. And we keep waiting and talking and dreaming and desiring and imagining, how much time are you going to give it? Doesn't click into gear. Doesn't happen. Nothing magical ever happens there. We can desire more, we can try harder, but those things just aren't enough. I have learned that there are some areas of my life where I can't trust myself. I need somebody on the outside to help walk me through those areas. Because I'm afraid, or just, I don't want to be responsible. Maybe I think it's over my head. Get somebody, walk through those things, turn and attack them. Okay, let's wrap this up. You got a sluggard in your world, the best way to deal with them is to pray for them and allow them to eat the consequences of their own choices. If we don't allow them to feel the pain, we're really perpetuating the problem in stealing from them an opportunity to become morally responsible themselves. We do it in the name of love. We don't want to see them hurt. But sometimes hurt is the greatest gift we can give them. So they begin to take personal responsibility for themselves. For example, don't stay up too late or help your kids do too much homework, for example, or a chore they ought to do, or their job throwing papers or whatever the case may be, mowing yards. I know the kids are not little adults. They're kids. They're immature by adult standards, but there is a time to help. But make sure we're not doing for them what they should and can do for themselves, because we're really not helping them. We are perpetuating the problem of immaturity and overdependence. It's hard to let our kids or friends or associates fall and hurt. We've got to, if we're really committed to them. That's the most loving thing to do with a sluggard. And I want to tell you one occasion, and I'll pray in just a second. I remember it came to me one day not in this building, it was years ago, where a couple stood across from my desk and we were counseling, working through their terrible marriage. And it dawned on me at a moment in time, you know what? I realized I care more about their marriage than the two of them do together. I am feeling more responsible for their marriage than they are for their own rotten marriage. How sick am I? How sick am I? We need times like that, back off. Let it go. Let it go. Let them to reap the consequences of their own choices. There's a time to help. There's a time to back off. Let the Spirit of God work. If they will not continue to quench and grieve Him, but let Him in to lead Him through that place. So I'd like to ask you this morning, where's the Spirit of God put His finger on you this morning? What area of your life? Maybe your whole life. What area of your life has He convicted you of being a slacker or sluggard? You ready to let that area go? Let Him come in and lead you out of it? Or are you just going to keep making up excuses for another day, another week, another month, and think something magical will happen, somehow click into gear, be okay? Are you willing to let Him lead you? You don't know how to move forward, get somebody on the outside. Talk about it. Get some perspective. Whether it's your health, money, relationships, job, whatever the case may be. Maybe your relationship with the Lord. Don't try to conquer Rome in a day. It won't be conquered in a day. But remember, what about Bob? Baby steps. Just baby steps. That's all we need. Little baby steps. Part of your plan should be to realize I may falter. Don't throw in the towel and quit. Make a plan to get up again, regroup, make mid-course corrections, modifications, and move forward, trusting the Lord to lead you step by baby step. Let's pray. Our Father, come here today to get under the microscope of the Scriptures. Look at the sluggard within, the sluggards within. Help us as we deal with sluggards without, to use the principles we've dealt with, but help us more importantly to look at the potential sluggard that may be residing in some part of our world, our lives, and to deal with them decisively rather than make excuses and just substitute desires and a good line. Help us to have the courage. May you lead us and direct us to turn and attack it. Deal with it. Get some help. Move forward. That Christ would be honored in our lives. That's our desire as we leave this place. We are also grateful, Father, that regardless of whether we deal with the sluggard within or the sluggard without, your love does not change. Your grace is unfaltering. May they serve as catalysts to deal with the sluggard within us, so we'd let nothing interfere with what you've called each of us to be with our lives and to honor Christ, whose name we pray. Amen.